On episode 21 of Lunch and a Divorce Lawyer, we meet employment law attorney Amy Kramer. We'll discuss why employment law was my favorite law school course, and then we'll launch into a discussion on key considerations for current and prospective small business owners on how to approach some of those first employee hires. Now, here's Amy. Amy Kramer with Kramer is at Law Group, I think. Kramer Law Group. Welcome to Lunch and a Divorce Lawyer, Amy.
Thank you so much, Peter. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, so Amy, you're an employment lawyer here as we're talking in August of 2023. Boy, I feel like I've known you for give or take, I don't know, 10 to 12 years, but we haven't connected a lot lately.
True.
So how did you end up there? How did you end up as a powerful employment law attorney in the Chicago area, Amy? How did,
Sure.
did that start in like junior in a junior high like civics class, or where did it start for you that has you here doing this?
That's a great question. So it really goes down to like a 5-year-old kind of idea that it is circuitous.
Okay.
So grew up in a household with a sick parent. My
Oh,
father
wow.
had Crohn's disease and was very sick a lot of my childhood. He went in when I was 5. I remember being in the car and my mom was picking him up at the Kimball L station,
Right.
and he came out literally with a pink slip. He was an architect. He worked for a large firm downtown. And this was before laws like the Family Medical Leave Act, where a company would be prohibited from terminating someone from using the benefits of the health insurance. So it was suspected that because my father was in and out of the hospital, he was the first to go when there was any kind of, reduction in force.
Right.
So from that, I saw the direct impact that it had on my family and my family stability. He went to work for himself and he was a very poor businessman. So a couple of things came from that. One, when I became a lawyer and wanted to start my own practice, I said, I'm not going to be a poor businesswoman. I'm
Okay.
going to exceed. I'm going to do exactly the opposite. And I think that's how you and I met, Peter, just networking and getting out there and telling
Right.
people the solutions that I can offer. So as it relates to the topic, though, of employment law, certainly, I just saw such a profound impact. And so from that time, I became a high school English teacher. I did my student teaching at Farragut Career Academy.
Okay.
And I said, I can't do this job. This is not how I want to contribute. I know that that kind of story is common. Teachers becoming lawyers. I think we know another one,
There might
Steve
be two of
Kotman.
those people on this interview, actually, Amy. You're not the only one who is a high school teacher in this, in these between you and I.
Oh my goodness,
So I don't know
Peter,
if you
do
knew we had that
tell.
in common, but it's true.
What did you teach, Peter?
Social studies.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. No, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I was just too young at, like age, like it was literally first job out of like college, right? You're 23 years old.
You look
And
like a
I did
senior.
enjoy it. I just wasn't ready for a career at 23.
Yeah, right. That's so, yeah, I know then you, Stephen Hoffman, also a teacher
Right.
before he went into practice, great PI attorney. And then I was like, my sister said to me, why don't you become a lawyer? I had never thought about it before. There are no lawyers in my family, and I just decided, well, what the hell? I'll take the LSAT and see what happens. Everything good came from that. So I met my husband while I was in law school. He also wanted to be an attorney, but just finished kind of doing his male 23-year-old rite of passage in California as a wildland firefighter in Yosemite.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah. And so I was already in law school, and we decided to get married, and I finished law school and he started. So I kind of say that I've been in law school two times. He went to the Loyola Knight program, and I went to what's now University of Illinois at Chicago, Douglasville. And I had a really great labor law professor. If you ask me his name, I would not remember. But I found that the material was very interesting because it wasn't as abstract as something like tax law. And I'm sure you're really familiar with this in family laws. Like, we're dealing with people, with strife, like every day. And I think that appealed to me on a human level. I think I have a natural instinct to try to take care of people. And so it really fit in with what my personality was as well. So these are really the basics of what got me here. I graduated in 2012, and there were no jobs at all. I was a contractor making $18 an hour with loads of law school debt, and I got released from that job a week before my wedding, and then my husband said, "You know what? Maybe you should just go out on your own." And I actually met with Stephen Hoffman. He helped me a great deal, like setting up profiles on Avvo, all that kind of stuff. And the rest is history. We're in our 10th year of the practice. So we're really, really doing, we've done a lot of work over the last 10 years.
That's cool. I didn't realize. There aren't that many people who, like really started their firm almost right from law school like that. I worked for, I had a couple jobs before I launched, even though it's been a minute now. That's cool. I mean, I love the personal connection to your father. That's cool. 'Cause I was much more in the box of kind of, no, I don't, this isn't supposed to be about me, so I won't go on.
Oh,
But it's just like
but I'm just
I
curious.
was working some job in Washington, D.C., and it's like, oh, there are a lot of people who went to law school on Capitol Hill. Maybe I will too. But yeah, I feel like it's much cooler when you can say, hey, client, this is what happened to me, and kind of like the personal tie. But so, and I'll tell you, I haven't, really practiced any employment law ever. So, I'm not a competitor, but I definitely remember, like you do, or like you just said there. And I know labor law is different than employment law, so I'm not gonna like.
Labor law is stuff with unions. Employment law is just stuff with a plain individual and a company. Yeah.
I'm not so sure that wasn't my favorite law school course as well. Not labor law, but employment law. And maybe for some of the same reasons you're talking about, right? So many law school courses are like, what would you say? Like theoretical, in the cloud, sort of
Law.
philosophical stuff. You're like some early 20s, mid 20s person. It's like, tax law, what is that? But employment law, I mean, it's been a minute since I was in law school, but number one, good instructor. Number two, everybody even had a job and stuff. And I mean, I just remember you'd have these funny cases of the woman who had the long hair who got fired for her self-expression on the job, or I don't know, religious expression. I mean, I don't even remember them all. I just
There
remember
was the Hooters case, you
the
know, is
Hooters. Yeah,
the
I think
Hooters
you're right.
case.
There was definitely a Hooters case for sure. Yeah, I mean, my wife actually at one time was a flight attendant. I mean, they used to have all those weird kind of you can only weigh a certain amount. I mean, that's probably like dark ages, but still, it's still kind of really super interesting, stuff you've experienced or at least kind of know of versus kind of the really amorphous sort of theoretical kind of law. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, practicing family law, you're taking people at their most vulnerable also. Like I'm talking to clients usually after they've lost their job or about to use, to lose their job. Or I'm talking with companies that have received, a notice that someone, like a former employee has filed an EEOC charge of discrimination against them, and they don't know what to do. So how is that, experience for you in family law?
I mean, to go back to my origin story, that has some overlap with some of the concepts you're talking about. I remember working at my favorite summer, I shouldn't say favorite, highest paid, most convenient law school job during the summer. It was at I'm forgetting the address. Is it 150 South Wacker? There's a building at the River and Wacker. Right across from Union Station, right? You know, so I was living in Glenview. It was great. I would just take the train downtown, walk over to Wacker or 150 West South Wacker, must be South Wacker. But all that to say is, it was insurance defense, right? You were basically defending big insurance companies. And that was really an important kind of turn point for me because it was a really enjoyable summer job, just having fun downtown, getting well paid, et cetera. However, you're dealing with these big entities or your clients. And right, I'm just some law school clerk, grant you, right? But still, that really was when I transitioned to I'd really rather be kind of have the meaningfulness of being with an individual one-on-one, really getting into in my case, family law. I remember specifically even that summer making a transition where I'm going to get involved in this. I went to Southern Illinois University School of Law. They had an elder law clinic. And I started being active in that, and it wasn't always necessarily family law, but the same idea. You have this individual, maybe in crisis or even not in crisis, but you genuinely feel like you have this client in front of you who you're really serving in a challenging time versus kind of insurance company X. And I'm not being all negative about insurance companies, but it's just kind of you're not dealing with a
Less
person.
personal.
It's just like this name. Like it's this comp this and it's huge company, not like a small business. This is huge company. So
Yeah, it's got to be so much less personal. And I think that's what, like you said, like in people in crisis. I think I'm kind of a steadying force. I mean, I think I'm like I picked that up from your personality as well. Like very let's baby step, put one foot in front of the other to try to gain some momentum to get out of this pit that we're in, and so I think probably a lot of our strategies are very similar in that they're incremental in a way. What do you do when, someone comes to you? Like, what are some of the techniques that you use when someone comes to you in crisis? Because I actually just I was looking at a CLE that was going to be put on, and it talked about compassion fatigue.
Wonder what
And
that even compassion fatigue. Interesting.
compassion fatigue, meaning you're giving so much to your clients and so much capacity, you know, so much of your compassion capacity.
Right.
What do you have left for yourself? And so I'm always curious, like, what are the, you know, I feel like we're part psychologists, counselors, and lawyers.
I'm a huge advocate. I mean, that's a big question, but I know, like, we have six core values at our firm. One of them, we're just actually, one of our annual goals is to create this little YouTube playlist that kind of gives a little explanation of our firm's core values. But one of them is being present, right? And I always think that's hugely important. Just, I feel like in family law, it's like people want to be heard, you know, it's, and I know we speak about kind of two or three things internally, like how much you're communicating with clients, how fast their case is getting resolved, and then what is sort of the substantive result. And what I've definitely found in doing this for close to 20 years now is this might sound strange, but substantive result is actually the least important of the three, whereas communication and kind of that idea of being present and, you know, communicating and really listening, I would say a lot of that is really the most important thing. I think we see, at least with client, really satisfaction, you know, they want to be heard. I would guess that's a lot of your experience, but I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, it's absolutely mirrors our experience. I think people, especially in a discrimination context, a lot of people are like almost in a state of disbelief. Let's say if you're a minority or person of color, I get calls sometimes from people who are like, is it possible that this could be racism?
Right.
Like there's a real, like desire to really think of the best, you know, and believe in the best in people.
Right.
And I think sometimes it's validating to hear a third party say, no, what you're describing to me sounds very, you know, traumatic, very, you know, motivated by race, motivated by some kind of discriminatory animus. And I think that just that off the top, acknowledging the experience that the client has had is really so important.
Hey, so Amy, here's our fun little hypothetical for the day, okay?
Right.
Here's in my law firm, Pro Divorce Lawyers, we have this woman named Monica Garcia. That's her name. It's a fake person, but it's our, you know, it's our ideal client. Monica's like 42 years old. She's a real estate agent in Oak Park, and she found out when she went to the AT&T store that her husband was cheating on her. And she has two kids, and so she, you know, she's been a real estate agent on her own. And why don't we just play it out like this a little bit? So Monica, you know, we've helped her out with her divorce. And now she's thinking about like maybe opening up her own brokerage or her own small business, you know, in 6 months. That's her like post-divorce therapy. We got her a big settlement. So now she wants to like rock it with her brokerage. What are a few tips for Monica? She launches her new business and potentially, you know, maybe she has employees, maybe she has contractors. What are a few things to get Monica going in the right direction from an employment lawyer's perspective?
Absolutely. First of all, congratulations to Monica on her settlement. Congratulations to you.
Thank you for that
settlement. So a couple of things for Monica is just to acknowledge what you don't know. You know, you didn't know, Monica, how to go through a divorce. So you called Peter. Right. And it's really the same type of thing from a business perspective. You can research online until the cows come home. And sometimes you're still not going to get the right answer. It's not going to be precise. And it's using up valuable time that you could use selling real estate, for
Right,
example.
right.
And so it's really best to just own what you don't know and say, I have to call someone who does know. And that would, of course, be Cramer Law Group
Yeah,
in this
absolutely.
hypothetical. The mistakes that I see, landmines that you want to avoid are really having employees before, like hiring someone prior to really being ready to take on that responsibility.
Right.
Contractors are easier, certainly, but there are tests that you need to pass in order for them to be an actual contractor.
Right.
In the context of real estate, it is very common to have both W-2 employees that work in your office
Right.
and other brokers who are contract workers under your brokerage umbrella.
Right.
And so there's different rules that apply to each. And certainly there's different policies that you want to have, right? So let's say for a real estate broker, independent contractor, you don't want them to take around your clients in a junky car, let's say, for example,
Sure.
right? That would not reflect well on your name, your reputation. So you want to make sure that there are things built into your independent contractor to make sure that that doesn't happen, and to set expectations, of course, for
Yep.
the contractor. On the W-2 side, I'm bringing up really some kind of aesthetic things, but you
Right.
don't want your receptionist to wear flip-flops and leggings to the office.
Right.
You don't feel that this is appropriate because, again, it's tarnishing your reputation. You want to set standards. So you've got these two things, and you have to, first of all, create the policies themselves and make the decisions. Okay, is it flip-flops on Thursdays? Are we going to have Thursday flip-flop day and that will be it? You can make some of these things up as you do go along, but
Okay.
you have to lay them out so that you expectation set.
Is this an employee handbook, or what's the written document minimums that I should be having when I open up my law firm or the real estate? I won't move away from the hypothetical. I'm thinking about stuff like I've done or not done. I mean, I do have an employee handbook. Is that like the bare minimum?
Yeah, I would say that that's really the bare minimum. And
Okay.
the key to the employee handbook, and I know that this happens to all of my business clients.
Yep.
They say, I had an employee handbook and I made it in 2017 and it's somewhere
Yeah.
in a drawer somewhere.
Right.
And I haven't updated it. So I don't even know what's in there.
Right,
And
right.
that's kind of where we come in and essentially triage the document because in Illinois, there have been so many changes to employment law over the past 5 years. Been crazy. Illinois
Wow.
is such a progressive state for
Yeah.
employees
Yeah.
and employee rights that
Yep.
the rights even of pregnant employees has actually really expanded. The Illinois Human Rights Act now applies to individuals or sorry companies with just one employee for pregnancy. You
Oh,
have to
wow.
have you just have to have one employee and you could be held liable for pregnancy discrimination. Another change in the law, and I'm just kind of I don't want to get totally in the weeds, but something to
Yeah.
be aware of is that Illinois changed or I'm sorry, added protections for sexual harassment of invitees into your business.
Right.
So let's
Okay.
say so you're eating Monica's at dinner.
Right.
She is being sexually harassed by a busboy who makes a lewd comment to her. Before this change in the law, the company would not have been liable for that. Now they are. So that's just another big change, another example. But the handbook is absolutely the bare minimum. And I would say it takes some time and some real thoughtfulness to go through and decide what your policies are going to be and how that's going to impact the culture of your business.
Any looking at myself and just, I don't know, I guess the world as, right, how we've changed working since, 2020 or whatever. You've seen more people kind of utilizing greater contractors than full-on employees. I mean, I feel like
That's a great question.
we've done that to a decent extent just because, I don't know, right? I mean, there are obviously reasons to do it, and well, and it's just so easy to have, I don't know, you mentioned having employees downstate. I mean, I've had employees downstate, right? Other states, right? And then if they're not, licensed attorneys, I mean, I definitely have friends who have, feel like the Philippines are popular for administrative
Yeah.
staff because they're English speaking and a little bit, lower on the wages.
Yeah, absolutely. I've definitely seen an uptick in using contractors. And what I tell clients who want to use contractors is that the beauty of contractors is that it really puts you in a position to almost never say no. If you have a W-2 employee that is like, I am going to submit a time off request, for example. I need, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday off. And let's say it's Tuesday afternoon, and you've got a huge project that they need to complete because you're on deadline. With that W-2 employee, you're going to have to tell them, no, I'm sorry, I can't do it. But by working with a contractor, now, granted, you can certainly direct them in some ways, it puts you in a position to not really have to say no. Because you really can't control how they execute the task that needs to get done. So I think that is definitely a preference for not only workers, but also the companies. From a worker
Interesting.
perspective, I know we have two stay-at-home moms who help us from time to time. And we love it because it gives them total flexibility with picking up their kids from school, doctor's appointments, all this kind of thing. And yet they're still able to make a contribution to their family's bottom line every month. And so I think that is really, I've seen actually a lot of that. And I think that the impact that that's having on society is really fantastic. It's giving caregivers another way to be independent.
I feel like I see both of it. Yeah, my wife does some contract work and I've used in contractors. And yeah, I feel like sometimes I'll still run into like the person who's, hey, I'm really thinking about hiring somebody and maybe they don't have maybe the resources for a full-time person. And they're still kind of stuck in that idea of like, oh, everybody wants a full-time job. And to me, there's so many just weird isn't the right word, unique and just like ways that people want to, need to, care to work these days. So it's just like, put some job out there and I bet you'll get some interest if it's kind of like interesting work, 'cause there's so many ways to work these days.
I agree. And with technology, you don't really need to be in the same room anymore. There's no, I think that a lot of law has gone beyond, Monica, will you go get the Smith file for me and put it on my desk, right? Everything's electronic. You're getting your own Smith file.
So some of the questions I like to ask all of our guests, and I don't know if this one applies to you, so you can just punt. Normally,
Okay.
I like to ask people if they're really kind of like tangential to the family law space. Like, what's your best piece of advice or biggest mistake you see for somebody going through divorce? You have an answer to that question.
I
But
do.
you're in employment law. You do?
I do. I
Let's
do.
go.
I do. I've seen situations where people don't want to ask for a raise following in a word of, you know, the words
Yeah,
maintenance,
like
or
maintenance or yeah, sure.
because they don't want to have their finances reevaluated by the courts.
Right.
And so they just kind of fly under the radar in a sense of like, my former spouse can just sit in it, and I'm just going to do my thing because I'm not going to pay them a penny more.
Yeah.
So I think that a prime piece of advice that I would give is you got to just continue living your life
Yeah.
and doing the best possible work that you could do.
That definitely comes up, even like, yeah, during the case, hey, Peter, should I change jobs, right? Start to earn more. And it's like, right? There's definitely some like intangible, I want to feel good about what I'm doing. And usually, I mean, frankly, that money from the employer is going to be, that's like 100% increase. Whereas when you're looking at child support or maintenance calculations, it's more like
Yeah.
percentage differences. It's much less bang for the buck than, hey, I'm now earning a quarter, 25% more as a salary or something. So
Right. More money
good
is more
call.
money. Yeah.
And how about this? Here's a fun question. So what's your favorite Chicagoland fun activity to do or recommend?
Bulls games.
Bulls games. I
Yes.
saw that in your bio. I mean,
I am a diehard Bulls fan. I'm really hoping for some more action this year. Seems like
okay.
we still have our two major stars. They haven't gone anywhere this summer. And so, here's hoping. But if anyone hasn't been to the United Center lately, it's time to go.
Is Billy Donovan the coach these days?
He sure is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like Billy Donovan. I
He's
remember
great.
for deeper from the co from his college career, because I mean I
You
was
play
in high
basketball?
school. I was in high school during the glory years with MJ Scotty and the gang, but I've definitely kind of stepped away in terms of I don't know. It's just I don't know. I've gotten deep into a few sports and NBA. My NBA interest has just dropped off a little.
Let
But
me guess, soccer.
no, I'm deep college football and golf.
Oh,
Those are my deep ones. I played small college football and I
okay.
still like to kind of loosely compete in golf.
Oh, that's fun. That's very
So,
fun. I took my son mini golfing at the Bunny Hutch. And he told me he wants to be a professional golfer.
hey. I mean, if to me, it's like I got into it really young, and so it's really a big enjoyment thing. I mean, I'm still like a really kind of a core jock. I mean, I like to be kind of compete, but I don't know. If some adult asked me, should I start playing golf? I'm not so sure I'd say yes, because it does take a lot of time and gets a little pricey. But hey, so here, last fun question, Amy.
Right.
There was like maybe 3 months, like 10 years ago, that my wife worked for my law firm. I feel like I'd laid somebody off, and there was just a little like, what, little gap there. And
Okay.
so it was a little fun. She'd come downtown and we'd have some cool lunches and stuff. But I think it's also true we would say never again.
Okay.
So you're in business with your husband, Thomas, right? How's that? Are you ever not working then?
Well, people ask me like all the time, how do you work with your spouse? And I say, well, I picked him because I really like him.
Oh,
He's really
sure.
great to hang
Absolutely.
out with.
Absolutely. Are there boundaries ever, though, at like Sunday at 4? You're not talking employment law, are you?
No, you know what? Our kids keep us pulled out of that the moment that we leave the office, step away from the computer. They
Okay.
want our complete attention. And
Okay.
so we're back, we're really back into family mode. One thing I will say is that it's kind of a wonderful thing to be able to bounce something off of someone, in such an informal way.
Right.
While we're making dinner, hey, what do you think about this idea for this case?
Yeah.
And that is really, really fun. It's really fun. Our poor children, they're probably not going to want to be lawyers.
I love my wife. I mean, but yeah, even like, even at times, like in our respective work lives, even right, it's Thursday night date night. It's like at a certain point, it's like, no more talking about work. No more talking. And we don't even work together, right? But it's no more talking about work. Let's talk about, what we're
Yeah.
doing on Sunday. So,
I know. You know what? It's hard for every couple, I think.
yeah. Hey, so Amy, thanks again for jumping on here and tell me a little bit about kind of like, hey, who's your Monica Garcia and like your ideal client? Like who should be calling you for your employment, labor law, legal services, and where can people find you?
Absolutely. So people can find us at Cramer-law.com. Name is spelled with a C, Cramer. Our ideal client is a working professional who is looking to make a job transition. And on the other side, on the employer side, we're looking for organizations to represent who are facing an inordinate amount of risk, essentially. So we represent temp agencies. We represent nonprofits. That's another really critical group because there aren't any resources to devote to human resources. And also the hospitality industry. So that has also been an area where we've been able to help
All
out.
right. Cool.
But beyond that, anyone who just has a job question, who wants to ask, hey, I had this weird conversation with my boss and then I got demoted, and we can talk that through.
Cool. I heard temp agencies, nonprofits, hospitality, weird conversations with your boss, demotions, and I think transitions, I
And
heard.
transitions
Yeah,
and trans.
absolutely. I would assume transitions would be, like a kind of a nice little catch-all, especially in the employee, maybe the employee side. Well, probably both, right? A lot. So
Right, especially,
awesome.
yeah, on the employer side, also when they're looking to kind of make a culture shift and need to let some people go.
Yeah. All
Yeah.
right.
Thank
Well,
you so much,
Amy,
Peter.
thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Take care. Get to a Bulls game.
All right. Bye.
Thanks. Bye bye.
Boy, so that was great. I hadn't connected with Amy Kramer in a long time, and I learned so much about her and employment law in our brief time together there. It was great hearing about her real personal story involving her dad and sort of why she got into the practice of family law. Also, the uniqueness of practicing with her spouse. I know Amy better, but I had lunch with her husband Thomas too. So that's really cool. That was a great takeaway on one of the biggest mistakes that she referenced was hiring too soon. And I know, right? I think some of that's kind of the legal. Are you ready for an employee? Some of it, I think, is kind of financial profitability stuff, right? Are you ready to take on that extra expense as well? And really, the idea of employee transitions as a great time to connect with Amy, right? If you're a small business person like myself, or if you're on the employee side, right? That's typically, I think, when a lot of the typical employment law sort of issues, wages, what are you owed on vacation, hiring, firing. I'm certainly not going to go into them all, but that idea of when you're in a transition, whether in or out of a job on the employer or employee side, really, probably a critical time to at least do some sort of a consultation with a great employment lawyer like Amy Kramer. So, as always, please subscribe to our podcast, Lunch and a Divorce Lawyer, and review us. We need to jack up those subscriptions and reviews over there, wherever you listen to your podcast. We're at all the big players, Apple, Spotify, Google. And you can learn more about me and my law firm, Pro Divorce Lawyers, at thepro.lawyer. Talk to you next time.